Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artistrator, watercolorist, and illustrator of over 70 books for children, as well as fine art of his own, E.B. Lewis. And we're going to be talking about his work. E.B., welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Hey, Mark. It's great. I'm glad to be part of this this venture, of exploring this great visionary of Boyd the Carver. He's been a hero of mine, actually, from the very first time I got a book. It was a friend of mine who gave it to me as a gift. It was his collaboration with Langston Hughes. They did a book, wonderful title, I love the title, Sweet Flypaper of Life.
Wow.
Langston wrote this great poem. The actual gift was a first edition. So I get this book, and the reason it was given to me because she said my work reminded her of the work of Roy, and the fact that of his people and his light and his shadows. And that's the reason she gave me the book. And it's how life works, that it comes full circle, and now I did a book on him. It's just wonderful.
Well, I actually am not calling to talk to you about that book. That's going to be another interview. I just called to talk to you about as being an artist.
Okay.
But now that we're on the subject, EB, now that you've let the cat out of the bag, you got to talk to me more about
the reason why. Let me tell you the reason why, Mark. Because you had said that you spoke with Gary Golio.
I did, but he never told me about this. I was interviewing him about Everywhere Beauty Is Harlem.
Well, that's it. That's the same book.
Oh, okay. And
that's the Roy the Carver, yes.
Oh, that's it. That's it. When I saw your watercolor work in this book, it blew me away. Especially things like the fold over cover, which I thought was just amazing, how you captured water in light. And I've interviewed Gary several times, and I said, I need to talk to that artist. And I was so impressed by your work. And I want to mention for the benefit of the audience that you have a wonderful website. Can you give it out? We'll give it out again at the end of the interview.
Sure. I don't know how wonderful it is yet because I'm working on it, but it will be wonderful.
Well, I saw it, and it had enough stuff on it to give you an idea of what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, it's going to be much more dynamic than it is now. I just haven't put much time to it. But it's www.eblewis.com.
Now, the amount of artwork that you've done blows my mind. First of all, you've illustrated over 70 books for children.
Actually, that's close to now. I have to get that updated because it's now about 90 books.
No!
I do about three or four books, actually two or three books a year. This past year, they threw a book on me that I turned down, and then they came back and said, "No, you have to do this book, and we will just work around your time." And I took another book, and it's a great book. It's a book from it's coming out next year. It's on Obama, and I got a chance to go to the White House and have carte blanche and just do some amazing things on this. But the subject is called Next Year in the White House, where he is the first president in the history of the presidency to actually have a Seder at the White House.
And that's
so
right.
It's about the first Seder. And just amazing. And I so happened to have gone to Israel. So I know what that whole experience is like to be in Israel.
Okay,
I'm in Israel.
EB.
But that's a whole other discussion.
Well, no, I want to discuss that. So you got to go to the White House?
Well, yeah, well, it's because this book is a...
Well, you act so cash about it. That's a huge deal. Did you get to do sketches while you...
I was working on just basically going to making sure that I had information right.
Yep.
There was a guy by the name of Eric, Eric's last name right now, but it eludes me. But anyway, he was so gracious he was one of three individuals that was with Obama in the hotel in Harrisburg when they had they were Jewish, and they went down into the basement of the hotel to have Passover dinner, have a Seder dinner there. And Obama came and was pretty much what they would call the stranger at the gate. And they invited him in, and they had the Seder. And at the end of the Seder, it's always said, that next year,
right.
The phrase is next year in Jerusalem. And he, after they said that, he says, no, next year in the White House.
Wow.
And that's the title of the book.
Wow.
And so I went there to D.C. with Eric, and he modeled for me and had a guy by the name of Herbie that were there. These were two guys that were there on that particular day in Harrisburg. This was while they were on a campaign trail with Obama. And so it was just fascinating. I got a chance to get a flash drive from the family of the Obamas to have candid shots of the family that I have in my own possession now. That was just this fabulous. I had to recreate these images, you know, that happened, you know, a decade ago, more, and to be able to bring this and make this actual occurrence feel as if it happened yesterday. And we're talking about in history, but I had to make the people around this table, especially when it was done at the White House, and all the people that were involved that came to these various seders, but this particular one seder at the White House, I needed to have all that reference in there, and all the reference wasn't available to me. So what I didn't have available to me, I actually had to go and create and get. And so that's where the White House comes in, and that's where I'm working with Herbie and Eric and all that came into play.
Wow. Jesus.
So that's a book that's coming out next year. So I do.
Like, when do you think, what part, what time next year do you think?
It's going to come out around Passover.
Okay.
Yeah.
What an experience. Now, first of all, I don't think we've given out your website yet.
Oh, I did. I said.
Oh, we did? Okay. I got lost in going to the White House. First of all, okay, so you're a watercolor illustrator for like over 90 books. But, and I want to emphasize, that's why you need to go see the website if you're listening. You have a whole other set of artwork that just knocks my socks off. I mean, you do portraiture, you do paintings of people, you do landscapes. You've got.
Well, I'm a fine artist first.
I know that.
An illustrator. And so I don't actually consider myself an illustrator. I really don't like the term.
Well, you on your website, you call yourself an. You call yourself an artistrator.
I'm an artistrator, exactly. And so I don't like the term as it pertains to children's books. I don't think we do illustration in children's books. I think what we do, we're visual storytellers. At least I am. That's the way I see my own work, that I'm a visual storyteller. And I'm a fine artist, and so that's why you'll see that on my website and in my work and my books and in the museums and the galleries that I'm a part of. I have two galleries in France, one in Luxembourg, and I mean I'm all over the place. And I'm having a show this year in September in the gallery in France, right outside a little city there, a nice great city in Provence called Montelimar. In the town, the name of the gallery is called Art de Temps, which is the art of the times.
Yep.
I've been there for 12 years. I'm the first American artist to show at this gallery. It's a very prestigious gallery with artists from all over the world, Japanese and German and whatever, Italian. And so I'm the first and only American artist that shows there. But so you'll see, a lot of my galleries actually show both fine art and the illustration. I don't separate them.
Yep, I can see why.
I don't separate them. And so as a result, people who collect my fine art also collect my illustration.
Well, in your case, there's no separation. It seems like, for instance, when I'm looking at the book, which I have right in front of me right now, about Everywhere Beauty is Harlem, those are fine art paintings that just happen to be in a young people's book.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you for that.
So let me stop you.
I don't paint down to children, you know. They're so insightful and so amazing, and you can't compete with a child's imagination. So nor do you should you try. You can encourage it and entice it and work as a catalyst to it, but you don't compete with a child's imagination. And so I don't paint down to children, and so they're ready for it. You know, if you sit down with a child and have them talk about a piece of art, man, they will just blow you away of what they see, and that's what the work is about, and that's what I want. I want people, children and adults alike, to pick up this work, to learn about this great visionary Roy de Cava, Everywhere Harlem, Everywhere Beauty is Harlem. And he basically, and I looked at, when I did the history on his work, as an illustrator very much works like the author in this case, because he's telling one side of the story, and I take the actual story that is told by the author and then retell the story. as a visual version. And so I had to go out and do my own research. And in my own research, I found out that Roy actually paralleled my life in the sense, or I paralleled his life. And I grew up in inner city, and not of Harlem, but in Philadelphia. I shined shoes and served and delivered newspapers and just that sort of thing of that growing up and having the influences of different artists. Both of my mother's brothers, my two uncles, were artists.
That's right.
And so in my household, my father worked at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And so grew up in, you know, with art all around. It was a central part of my education was the art. And so he talks about how much he loved Van Gogh. Van Gogh is one of my heroes. And you'll see the influences of those individuals. Earlier we had a conversation about Homer.
Yeah.
And Homer being in Winslow, Winslow Homer, and Sargent, and Zorn, and DeZorn, those individuals that worked in this medium are my heroes, and those are the people that influenced my work so much so you'll see the color and the light and all that. But also with Roy worked in black and white. These pieces that you see in color, in the book, are in color. And it's largely because the publishers didn't want a black and white book, which made it very difficult for me. So that meant that I had to actually go to follow and understand his vision and take what was his vision and turn it into black and white. Turn his black and white vision into color, which is very difficult to do.
I was going to say, because that's a real challenge, because first of all, his photographs are like they have to be in black and white. And I know that he's done some color photography, but mostly he did black and white.
Mostly he did black and white, exactly.
And that's the essence of his photographs. So to reinterpret them in color is a complex process, and it's difficult to make that work. But a good example, the cover and back cover illustration of children, water fountain.
In New York City. Yeah.
What happens is when I saw it in color, that made me think of the real thing that Roy photographed.
Yes.
So that I'm looking at you and I'm looking at your work, and that looks like the actual event that DiCarrara photographed and then put into black and white. It's like apples and oranges. But in order to tell the story, you need to take not his work, but your work in order to tell that story. And I think that works.
You bring up a very interesting point, because what happens when a person sees a piece of art, what is the first thing you see?
Mm.
The first thing a person sees is color, the very first thing. And then the next thing is the abstract form, the way that it's the black and white, the way the shapes break up the plane. So that's what happens in a black and white photograph. So you remove the color, so all you now are faced with is the abstract form. And so that's what makes those images very powerful. And then what he's doing, he's using light and shadow, as I do, because shadow and light become mystery. It becomes subject in and of themselves. And so the shadows, like Caravaggio, or Van Gogh, Rembrandt, and that, chiaroscuro of how understanding light and shadow and how powerful it is, it brings in a mystery. And so these wonderful pieces become even more powerful because the brain is trying to solve and add these components, but they're shrouded in shadow or shrouded or blurred out because of the light. And it becomes very fascinating, and your brain just never stops. Your brain's, oh, my God, it's so amazing, it's so great stuff, and I can't stop looking at it. And that's what happens. And so I'm as if Roy and I walked down the same street with his vision. The only thing what I did is I adopted his vision. It is, if we walked down the same street at the same time and both of us had cameras, he's going to see something totally different in that scene that I would. But so what I had to do is say, okay, I'm walking with Roy, and I want to see what he sees. And I want to show the world what he sees in color. So that's pretty much what the book is doing.
Now, that's a very intimate thing that you're doing with his work. Because you've done 95 books, do you go through the same?
Increasing the number. They went from 70 to 80 to 90 and well, 95. Okay, we'll be at 100 before the end of this interview.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, getting back to my question. You don't go, do you go through this whole process for every single one of those books?
For every single one of my books, yes. My that's how I know that I'm, you know, there people on their lives, their, this life journey is, you find yourself on these various contributories.
Yeah.
And hopefully that they lead to a stream. And, you know, I am on that stream without a doubt that this work that I'm doing is the work that I was meant to do. I am, in the phrase of passion, I am passionate, but I have a purpose-driven life. And my purpose-driven life is to, as most artists, as all artists, to, it's not about the actual medium that you work in and in the idiom. It is basically what we have in common is that we sit out on the peripheral and we're in constant observation of the world and we're documenting it. And so what we do is we leave it behind. And I think it was coined, I mean, something I remember that was said by James Baldwin's brother when he was asked about James' legacy. He said, Jimmy talked about it often when asked of his legacy. He said, when they sift through the wreckage and brush away the detritus, hopefully they will uncover something, something that I left behind, something that somebody else can use. I'm like, wow, that notion of leaving something behind that somebody else can use. That's what this is all about, and that's what it's about for me. And so my work is that documentation. And so I am that pursuit. I can't shut it off, even if I tried. And every waking hour is in that pursuit of looking and finding things that people walk by often and don't see. And I'm stopping them for a moment to say, look, check this out. Huh. Look how beautiful this is. And in the case of Roy, he says, I'm going to turn the camera on you, on my people that I love. And I want you to look at yourself and see how beautiful you are.
I got to talk to you, though, because there's a few paintings that I saw on your website. First of all, your paintings of people are just outstanding. And so when I look at some of the, like, slough fishing and these very close portraits that you do of people, I have a real palpable sense of being there. The lighting, obviously, is crucial. It's dramatic. I can actually feel the temperature of what it's like to be there by looking at your paintings. But you also have some paintings where there's no people, like the blue wheelbarrow against the cracked wall and the chair in the darkened room. Talk to me about those paintings where people are absent.
Because they're one and the same, meaning that I don't separate from people to inanimate objects. It's all, to me, everything has this wonderful moment in time, and it is basically highlighted by shadow and light and emotion. So I can look at a tree, the simple tree, and there's a, you know, there's a painting there with this kind of dead branch is in the background, this kind of with this beautiful alizarin colors behind it. But that tree has this as much emotion in it that any person could ever have, And so I'm capturing it. My work is really, if you look at the essence of my work, is about emotion.
Yep,
and I'm looking and I'm trying to capture that nuance, that thing that is felt. It's like baking a cake, really. You know, you go out to set out to bake this ginger cake, you know, and you put all these ingredients in. But if you forget to put the ginger in, you can't call it a ginger cake, you know. So it's an ingredient that actually has to be put in, and emotion is an ingredient that is put in.
That's right.
And the difference is, it's like I paint until I feel it. I don't stop that feeling until that person actually almost turns to me and says, "Hello, thank you, you know, for doing this." Or that tree even says, "Oh my God, you see what my favorite time of the day is. I love that. Thank you."
Wow. In those paintings, like the chair in the darkened room, especially. The silence of that darkened room with the chair becomes another actor in the painting.
Also, it's the absence of the person. What I want you to feel is as if somebody just got up from that
chair and was gone. Who just left that chair?
That's what it's about. You know, and I have an affinity for chairs. I collect Windsor chairs.
Really?
And so it's hard for me to walk past a chair and not notice.
So there's the whole story of E.B. in the chair.
Yeah, there's a whole story of E.B. in this. Yeah, Charles Santori got me all excited about this wonderful illustrator, passed away not too long ago. He did a whole book on the Windsor chair. He did total research and connected me, and it's like, so I'm just love Windsor chairs. But it's that, for me, as in Roy, where light can change a whole scene. I mean, this is something that would be very mundane in life. You know, you're walking down an alleyway and you see these trash cans on this one particular time of day, and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't say anything. And then the same day, you walk at another time of the day in the evening, and all of a sudden this crack of light sunlight comes through and streaks down onto that trash can, and all of a sudden it becomes magical. And it's about waiting in that moment of time, you know, where it's that notion of being in the right place at the right time, you know, where things become magical. And sometimes you have to wait, you know, hours and days, even weeks and months to actually be there at that right moment in time.
Was there a moment when you found your light? Like, and let me explain that. You know, back in the, we were talking about other artists before, they often had to go to North Africa or someplace where the light was very dramatic, and they found that sense where, okay, now I know what light's about. Was there ever a moment for you where you finally looked at something and went, that's it. Now I understand how light works in this.
I understand all that thing of going to places to see the light. Like Santa Fe, reason people gravitate, artists gravitate to Santa Fe, because it's, when you study light, you understand that the nuances of light. And so, for example, in Santa Fe, the white sky and the light is white, brilliant light, white. Oh, God. Here on the East Coast, it's a gray. And so it changes the color of things, because without light, there's no color. And so when you go to Santa Fe, things are much more brilliant. The colors are much more surreal. And it just blows you away. So that's when you go to Africa and places like that. And I've been to Africa. I've been pretty much all the continents. I do about six or seven continents.
Where did you go in Africa?
I started out in North Africa, Morocco, and then from East Africa. I should say that's West Africa. I just came back from Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, and Ghana. And East Africa, Ethiopia, Madagascar, Tanzania, Kenya.
Totally different experiences in each place. So we're gonna run out of time on this interview. EB, I gotta ask you one more question, because we're gonna run out of time, and I'll have to have you back. When you're visiting these countries, you're bringing your palette with you and your paper and your sketching, or what?
Yeah, not only am I bringing that in my camera, my camera's the iPhone, but before I would carry my, 35 millimeters, but now I'm doing my iPhone in the back of my pocket. And then I carry my sketchbooks and watercolor pens and things like that. But also now I'm taking people, artists, on these tours of Europe and Asia and Africa and places like that. And we go not to to go to actually paint. It becomes a secondary thing. So we go to look at art. We go to look at life and experience that in the culture.
Nice.
But while we're out sipping, like at a cafe, sipping a beautiful glass of vino, we pull out our little sketch pads and pencils and watercolor and start and have this wonderful, relationship with the space there as an artist. And it becomes this wonderful, magical thing. And then all of us get up and we go into the Reina Sofía Gallery or the Prada in Spain, or we go to the Louvre or the Museum d'Orsay in Paris, and we sit there and we look at one of our favorite paintings and have this wonderful discussion about the piece. It is amazing. You got me all excited.
I'm excited just listening to you.
I want to get up now.
No kidding. That's We only got like 2 minutes left. Can you remember the first young people's book that you illustrated or you actually did the art for? Let me put it that way.
Yeah, the first book was Fire in the Mountain.
Oh, nice.
Simon and Schuster. Yeah, Fire in the Mountain. So it's an Ethiopian folktale. And it's about a little boy going off to find his sister who works for a very wealthy man in the mountains of Gondor. really beautiful book.
Now, all the books that I've seen so far that you've illustrated, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen all 1,500, but they all have a soul. They all have a center. They all have a reason for being other than just a happy-go-lucky book.
The reason for being, because there are no two books of mine alike.
No.
Because I'm a fine artist and not an illustrator, and so there are no two stories alike. And so in that sense, I'm taking and going as a director. I see a book, and this is a great way to end this wonderful conversation. I see a book as a motion picture.
Huh.
It's a film between two pieces of cardboard.
And you're the director.
What you're seeing I'm the art director. I'm not only the art director, I'm everything that is required.
Then the camera person. Yeah.
I'm the camera person. I'm the set designer. I'm the lighting person. I'm all those individuals. And what I do is now I take that story and I'm just so in a motion picture, you have not only the motion picture camera, you also have the still camera. And when I watch film, what I'm looking at is the still shots. So, like, one of my favorite black and white, like Roy, I love black and white film noir.
Oh, yeah.
And so my favorite is Il Pastino, the postman.
Yep.
And it's just, oh, my God, wonderful, wonderful movie. If anyone is listening and have not seen Il Pastino, go and see Il Pastino.
Oh, man.
So, but in that is that idea of that timelessness, you know, of that those wonderful still shots that's what I'm doing. So when you go through my books, forget, know that the motion picture is happening. The motion is happening. But what I have done is I just only stopped you and looked at the stills.
We're going to have to stop there because we're completely out of time. So, EB, can I have you come back?
Oh, please do. Thank you for the opportunity, Marshall.
Tonight's guest is artistrator, watercolorist, artist. He's done over 90 books for children. I don't know what count we're at now. It's EB Lewis. Please go to give your website again.
Oh, www.eblewis.com.
EB,
If you Google EB Lewis,
you'll find
right
it.
Up and you'll see all the work and things that I'm doing as well.
I think next time I want to talk to you about your travels and the artwork that's come out of it. So can we do that?
Yes.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.